This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antek. We're taking a break from our usual show today because we are celebrating 10 years at BFM. All day, we've been taking a look back at important milestones over the past decade. On this hour, we're reflecting on G13 and G14. I have a full house in the studio with me to do just this. They are General Manager Mira Sivasodi.
Hello.
Head of Digital and New Media Ezra Zayed.
Hello, hello.
And last but not least, former Morning Run presenter Sharad Kutan, who has very kindly returned to do this without payment. Thank you very much. welcome all.
He signed off on
it's
that.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I will build you at the end of this.
So, if we could choose, you know, any 10-year period to cover, I think there would be few better than the 10 years that just passed. The station was founded in 2008 after the political tsunami of G12. And over the next 5 years, the new two-coalition system would build up towards, until then, the most fiercely contested general election in our history. In 2013, Anwar Ibrahim, leader of the opposition, was out of jail in full force, leading Pakatan Rakyat into battle with Barisan Nasional. And on the other side, Najib Razak was seeking the people's mandate for the very first time as Prime Minister after taking over from Pak Lah in 2009. In the weeks leading up to Election Day, the air was palpable with excitement, the mood was electric, and massive rallies were taking place across the country. Mira, if I can start with you, What were we thinking then? Summarize for us the mood at the office at that time.
I think there was a lot of hope. We were excited. It was going to be our first election coverage on the station. So we had a lot of ideas and, you know, we were advised. We were, of course, worried about election coverage. We're always told that we're a business and finance station. There's no place for politics on this station. Whereas, you know, in our minds, we knew politics was intertwined with business and finance. So, and our listenership had grown to sort of look at us, or they were looking forward to us, or they depending on us to educate them, to give them different perspectives about what was happening in this country. And so we had to continue to give them that sort of coverage as well, given the general election. So what we did is we decided to propose to our regulators, give them a plan as to what we were thinking about how to cover GE13 at that time. So we proposed to give both sides of the divide equal airtime. We were even had a proposal for a commercial aspect to GE13 for political parties to actually advertise or to be given airtime, but for us to be paid for it. We submitted this proposal to our regulator to be on the safe side, given that, you know, in terms of media freedom at that time, it was a little tight. Mm-hmm. And so we did, but that proposal was thrown out. And so we were not able to go ahead with it.
Literally thrown out?
Literally thrown out. I mean, we had to sit through an ugly meeting with one of the higher-ups at our regulators, and it was thrown out. Yeah, after, 2 hours of chatting, one person chatting, it was thrown out. So we came back and we knew that we couldn't just sit back and do nothing. And so a decision was made to go ahead with GE13 coverage, but a scaled-down version of what our proposal was. Of course, we were going to have balanced discussions. And so we defied and went against the regulator and did GE13 coverage.
Sharad, the current affairs segment was created before you joined us, but you took it and molded it in your image and turned it into something more than this stepchild of Morning Run, if you will.
He gave it new life.
Yes.
That's
new
very
lines.
Kind of you to what? Say.
Giving me a lot more work.
So, considering what Mira just said, and we had this constraint to work with, what was your strategy going into G13? Were we, at that time, trying to shape the conversation? Or were we just, you know, new kids on the block trying to just keep up with the other players?
Yeah, in many ways, you know, we're at a disadvantage compared to larger media organizations that have bureaus across the country. They have state-based bureaus. They have journalists who are dedicated reporters. And so there's a well-oiled machine with many of the large media organizations. But with the smaller ones, the portals, you know, the Malaysian Insights, Insider, that point and others, that was a much more even playing field. And I think they taught us that you don't have to be comprehensive. You can be very targeted and still produce and still lead in the conversation. So I think that was one thing. I do think that doing the current affairs program for all those, for that period, you just learn that you need to reflect people's concerns or direct them to things that you think ought to be of concern. And you're really just one of many voices anyway. So, you know, you're never really dominating the field. But to the extent that people were listening to us, we had to truly reflect both the mood on the ground, to some extent capture the big stories and help frame them for our listeners. But they were, we assume, I think our listeners were, one, educated and devouring whatever information they could from all sorts of sources. So it was just one of many platforms for them to kind of explore their ideas around what was happening to the country at that point in time.
Mm. And Ezra, through Talkback and other programs on Evening Edition, I guess you had your finger on the pulse on what the people of Klang Valley was feeling, because feedback was immediate. How were our listeners feeling at the time?
It was interesting, because I think prior to 2013, you know, just even with the introduction of and the usage of social media in the Malaysian landscape, you didn't need to look too far to figure out what people were talking and sharing about to create content for our show. So, you know, Talkback Thursdays back in the day, where people would call once in a week and share their thoughts and grievances about the state of the nation. And, you know, when you're doing it every week and when you're doing it over the course of a number of months, you start seeing certain patterns. And as much as we wanted to, you know, avoid political issues for the sake of our regulators, it was almost inevitable that most of the conversations were directed towards some sort of frustration towards the political system. So many of the issues that we spoke about on the programs, you could tell that some issues, you know, nobody's going to call in because we were playing it safe. But when we spoke on issues that were really at the foremost of their thoughts, the phone lines would blow up, our Twitter thing would blow up, and it created a certain amount of momentum. And I think even in that momentum, there were people even within the government of Barisan Nasional who sort of acknowledged that, hey, maybe there's a way that we can respond to and engage with it at the same time, because it was the federal government at the time. And so there was a real movement. And I think nobody sort of really knew how to sort of grab a hold of the situation per se, whether you're a media organization. But I think we're just responding to a very exciting new media landscape. And going into the election, as Mira said, there was a lot of perhaps pushback on the regulators' part to sort of proceed with this kind of program, but it was almost, nobody was not talking about it. And so it was a real, if the recent general election was the breaking of the glass ceiling with regards to topics of what you can and cannot discuss, I think the crack might have taken place in a meaningful way prior to the 2013 general election.
Yeah. Mira, how many times did you have to say no to, you know, Ezra and Sharon during that time?
I honestly cannot remember, but
she gives the most polite no. To be fair,
the whole office must have hated you.
They did. Sharad in particular. I mean, we've had tons of run-ins, Sharad. I'm amazed we still talk. I think
were
because
there particular episodes, you know.
I can't remember.
Well, she can't remember because there's so many.
There were so many. So,
You know,
a wide variety of issues.
Let me put it on a record. I never took anything
personally.
I mean, I think Mira played the role of super ego, and you know, some of us played the role of id, if you think of that kind of Freudian frame. But it was necessary. Right? You need all the parts. You need somebody who's going to be saying, we have to be careful. And then the others who say, no, we need to push the line. And you need both elements, I think, in any good media organization to advance forward. I do think, though, I mean, the general tone that we took and the ability to move forward and that came from the signal from above. I think once Malik and the shareholder, I assume the shareholders, were agreeable to pushing the line, then the game had changed for us, right? Because until then, we could have played it safe. But perhaps there was some sort of calculation that this time, that is in GE13, that the federal opposition might in fact take power. They didn't, but at the same time, so that was a calculated risk in some ways. It didn't pay off. But then there were apparently no consequences. I think
there weren't any, yes.
Which also was quite shocking, right?
So, yes. But also very encouraging and emboldening. You know, it emboldens everybody in the station as, you know, content creators, as newsmakers. It really sort of said, hey, so if we could have done that and nothing happened and the world is still moving and we all have our jobs, then let's go on to the next day and figure out what else we can do. Yeah. So, yeah.
Mira, you must be in two minds about this, you know, because I'm sure you wanted to, you know, push the boundary as well. And but at the same time, you have to play, you know, for lack of a better word, the bad person,
the bad cop.
Yeah, bad cop.
I think because of all those meetings I've had with our regulators in the past, interactions, building relationships with them, and I have to say on a working level, they were very supportive of the work that we did. Can't speak about the higher-ups, but on the working level, they were behind us in a way.
They're professional.
They're very professional, and they made it clear to us that they had stakeholders to also answer to, and so we kept that at the back of our mind. So in my mind, they were not the enemy. I think to the rest of the station, our regulator was the enemy. In my mind, I knew they weren't. And vaguely, I roughly knew where the boundaries were for BFM. I knew it in my head based on how, you know, when we got into trouble for various interviews and what they were actually looking at, you know, have a balance, you know. And so some things were red flags, I know. Race issues, sexual issues, language. We're very sensitive as Malaysians to these issues. And all you need is one person to complain and there would be an investigation for
it. The process almost takes over, right?
Correct, yeah. And nobody has a choice because there's a complaint, right? They have to do their jobs. So it was a difficult time, yes. So I knew based interviews were recorded to a very large extent. We were hoping that it will be recorded so that we could listen to it again and decide whether or not some parts needed to be taken off. Very much Sharad hated that, I know, because that was in a way interfering with the whole editorial process. But in some instances, in our minds, we knew what was going to trigger that red flag and what wouldn't.
And I guess one of the tricks and to game the system individuals like myself would organize live calls for current affairs programs.
Because he knew then I had no chance to listen to it and throw it out.
Because it's live, right? And that's the wonderful thing about live radio. I mean, the ability to censor is much more limited. And there are also the things that I think perhaps we were a bit concerned about, which is by going to the ground, we were also plugging into the mood of the country and having that live on radio. Very much in the way that talkback also sometimes do that. You hear people's feelings, their passions, their anxieties, when they're angry. And hearing, something we don't like to do. We like to do cool talking heads.
Well, hearing those voices beyond the Klang Valley for the 13th general election was also really exciting because we had many of our junior producers and presenters going back to their respective home states, voting, and then staying on in those areas so that we could call in to where they were and give us a sense of what the mood was on the ground. So from sort of a creative and also sort of journalistic perspective, that was our first opportunity to stretch our legs in that capacity, unlike the bigger organizations who probably had the sort of greater experience in doing that.
And we did get into trouble for even some of the things that people said on TalkBack. I mean, we were called up. Why did the caller say this? Why did you allow the caller to say this? But at the back of my mind, I always felt this was really good feedback for people in power. And why is it nobody paid attention to this? But the general feeling among a lot of our politicians at that time, or maybe it still is that BFM was preaching to the converted. And we didn't represent Malaysians as a whole.
But little did they know that the country would throw them out of power.
Exactly.
Precisely for ignoring the, you know, sentiment on the ground. But if just going back to what Ezra is talking about, I think one of the high points for me during the GE13 coverage was Aisha Tajuddin's report from Johor, from Gelang Patah, where, you know...
it was the frontline state where Lee Kit-siang was taking on, rather spearheading the assault on Johor.
That's right. And she reported on the use of the light strike force, so the FRU, I don't know which one it was, but they had were moving against a crowd of people, and she, in her voice, carried all that excitement, anxiety, fear, and that you would feel if you were actually there. And I think that's the great thing about radio. I mean, the ability to tap into those raw emotions and, you know, and disseminate them. Though I come back to this thing, I do think that sometimes we ourselves as media practitioners don't want to have that raw emotion out there, because then we feel that perhaps we're inciting people or, you know, and the like. And I think, but unfortunately, it makes the best radio when you have those emotions.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable with those kind of elements in sort of live radio, because, you know, much of what we do has a certain amount of curation and direction to the type of programming that we produce, and live radio, especially in instances like a general election, it almost is a necessary ingredient to have. And I think there were a lot of the lessons that we learned from that experience that we carried on into the recent general election.
Yeah, I would just like to add that, Mira, all the cases that you mentioned, I think all of us are very familiar with it, because you make us go through an orientation about, you know, the boundaries or parameters that we are allowed to.
I can throw that presentation out the window now. I don't need to do it anymore.
And that's a very real, tangible difference of what happened after May 9th, which we will talk after this short break. We're looking at BFM's coverage of elections. When we come back, the mother of all elections, GE14. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Trot Antic. BFM turns 10 years old today. All day we've been looking back at the decade that was. On Live and Learn, we've been discussing election coverage. In the studio with me, I have an all-star panel of Sharat Kutan, formerly of Morning Run, Ezra Zayed, formerly of Evening Edition, and Mira Sivasuli, formerly of The Bigger Picture. All are here to reminisce the good old days of talking politics under Barisan Nasional. Mira, you started off the discussion about how you had a meeting with MCMC before we decide on how to proceed with G13. For G14, you had a meeting as well with MCMC, and I remember the meeting that you had with individual belts or programs telling us, you know, what we can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And I remember very specifically you said no mention of 1MDB, no mention of GST, at least not when it's unfavorable. Try to tamp down on cost of living and invite no politicians.
So, what was left to talk about, right? yes.
And it's fascinating to reflect on it now. As you mentioned those four things, it's like, oh, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, given what transpired.
It's everything that drove the outcome of GE14. Yeah, yeah. Yes, we were called up again faithfully before the elections. And, you know, one of the higher-ups in MCMC, of course, chaired this meeting. It wasn't a very pleasant one again. I have no idea how I see
it. So when it's not pleasant, is it a one-way conversation, or are you actually having a conversation?
Very much a one-way conversation.
Okay, okay. So they're talking at you.
They're talking at me.
Right. You know, I wish I was in the room. My biggest regret was I would have just been very quiet and taken copious notes, which I would have then... I would have then put into my memoirs. But, you know, now I can only report on reported speech of said meeting.
You know, this time it was especially sensitive because we were looking to renew our license, wasn't it, Mira?
No, this is after the license was renewed. Oh, okay. License was renewed last year in July. This happened this year, just before GE14. And yes, so in not so many words, we were told that we cannot invite politicians or give them any airtime, and that to stay away from these issues which, you know, posed to be a threat to the government at that time.
Can I just jump in here? Just you mentioned the renewal of the license. Yeah. It is an interesting fact that you think that once you received your license that you feel liberated and emboldened or free peace to do more. In fact, it's just the opposite. The whole point about the licensing thing is that you're terrified in the run-up to your license renewal that you won't get the license renewal unless you play ball. And then once you get your license, you're terrified that you're going to lose it. So the whole licensing system is designed to have a chilling effect on your ability to act professionally as journalists, you know, or media practitioners, or in this case, as media owners, to, you know, to do the right thing. So I think that, you know, strangely enough, getting the license didn't, in fact, help us. In many ways, it made us even more fearful to push the envelope.
And in fact, you know, elections notwithstanding, in the lead-up to the license renewal, given the discussions of what was happening in the country about 1MDB, about protests on the streets, it was this very frustrating atmosphere in the office about the realization of what we can do and we want to talk about, but the restrictions that were placed. And, you know, it's all fair and well to say that, you know, you guys got to do what you got to do, but there are lives on the line. There are jobs on the line. There are people's livelihoods on the line. And, you know, when you're in the bubble in itself, you feel it a little bit more about what presenters want to say, what producers want to produce, and what people want to focus on. And I think it cripples the enthusiasm a great deal. And I think even, as Sharad said, when we got that license renewal, there was maybe a sense of relief, but also still this confusion and frustration about what you can and can't do. So even right now, we're not quite sure how far away we are from the bubble and all that kind of stuff.
So just to go back to licensing renewal, we were not told to hold back. It was something we decided internally to just watch what we were doing, because the license renewal was at stake. I mean, it was for 10 years. We weren't in the best books of people in power. So, and as Ezra said, if we didn't get it renewed, we had a lot to lose. We had 60 people who would lose their jobs just like that. Shareholders would lose all their money. And, you know, that's it. What do we do? Go online? That hasn't really been tested and proven yet, whether we would make the same amount of money and be able to run this organization. Mm. The answer was no. We'd probably become... you know, everybody would become a volunteer if that didn't come through. So that's what actually happened during the license renewal. But you're right. Editorially, nothing changes. We still knew where those, or roughly knew where those boundaries were, and we had to watch what we were saying and what we were doing. So nothing much changed after that, except the fact that everybody still had a job.
Was it made explicit to you from the people at MCMC that the people in power saw BFM as the enemy?
I think the timing of when they renewed our license was an explicit expression of how they viewed a media organization such as BFM. Mm. I think, you know, it wasn't, you know, when you renew a car, you know, road permit, you know, you don't have to do it the day before it expires. You don't have to do it a week before it expires. You can do it a significant amount of time. I think it applies to any type of structure. And so I remember being aware of the conversations about how we were being made to sweat a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think for me, it doesn't need to be said in a letter. It doesn't need to be said in a meeting. Those kind of actions speak louder.
Yeah. And I think it's a distant memory now, but in 2015, at the height of the 1MDB revelations, the Edge went out of print for a while because they were suspended.
That's right.
But of course, they came back to publish, and the courts found in their favour in their suit against the ministry. So I do think if we tell the story only with the suspension and not with the lifting of the suspension and the subsequent court case, we forget that even in the darkest days, and towards the end of the Barisan National, you know, dispensation, there were institutions that still had some integrity, and that we weren't without leverage. I mean, the idea is that there.
Well,
many
I don't think we weren't without leverage. I think we weren't without due process to make
but
sense.
But leverage
of that.
As well as look, it cost the government. It would have cost the government some. Something, maybe not very much, but something to clamp down on the media. Every attempt at clamping down on the media would not have gone down well, especially, for closing down the Edge, you know, that couldn't have sent much in terms of, you know, sense of confidence about the economy, you know, if the leading business newspaper had to be shut down. So, I mean, for me, it's a calculated risk. I mean, it's not a risk that me as a journalist has to take or make. It's your media owners. They're the ones ultimately. But because in Malaysia, for the most part, media owners have been quite slavish to Barisan Nasional and often bending over backwards to please Barisan Nasional, you know. So,
yeah. So we were the few who were, you know, pushing the boundaries, and so
a little bit, yeah.
So our voice was very loud at that time. But just coming back to the suspension of the Edge, I mean, from a business point of view, you would lose a lot of money during that time. And I cannot imagine how much money they lost.
10 million, I think, was the reported.
Okay. And question is, yes, courts lifted the ban, the suspension and everything. But in that time, you have to be prepared to run knowing that you're going to be losing money.
But I think there's also other things, right? So news organizations like Malaysia Kini and the medium of subscription of the model and the space that it provides when you sort of go online. For us as a radio station, for other websites and for other sort of, they have different sort of restrictions and areas in which they can breathe. And so it's not like a copy and paste approach of which one media organization can take as to what type of risk you're willing to make. I think there are quite sort of customized configurations. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the common denominator is that the Edge and us have licenses.
Yes.
From government. Mm. Online, there are a lot of grey areas. So with a license from government, they have more, control over you.
Ezra, so this time, GE14, you were kind of executive producing the election night coverage. What was your mission this time? You know, did you feel like there's a real impact to be made?
I think towards the end, you know, when it comes to coverage of the elections, a huge theme about it, it's about the elections being free and fair. And, you know, if you've observed elections in Malaysia for any period of time, and you've sort of read a little bit more and spoken to more people, there are many, many flaws in the system. And I think at the end of GE13, there was a sense that, oh, well, the system prevailed. And despite whatever gains that were made from 2008 onwards, the result was that it was a status quo. That maybe there was change, but it was just too nuanced that you couldn't feel it on a collective level. And by the time this particular election came around, my personal sentiment was that it was going to be more or less the same. That I in my head, I think I went down to the voting station. I saw a lot of people, which was nice. I placed my vote. But even after placing my vote, knowing that I had to come back into the station and sort of do the show, I was sort of more prepared of it being more or less the same, that change really wasn't in the air, at least in my view. Yes, I could see that people were attending, all of these things, but it doesn't really give you the right metric of what exactly the result is going to be. And I think on the night, as we were doing the coverage, it seemed to me, at least, that there was a notable apprehension on both sides, for both different reasons, on Barisan Nasional and Pakatan Harapan, for perhaps, for not being too cocky and also for not being too hopeful. And I think somewhere around 10 o'clock, 10:30, the results started slowing down. And in my experience, when the results start slowing down, whether it's a by-election or a general election, it means that a significant change has occurred and the system isn't really quite sure how to respond to it in a natural way. And so at that point in time, it gave me an indication that, well, the result might actually replicate GE13, but maybe there's a different nuance to it. And true enough, that we were getting reports from all around the country that there was a wind of change. And it was surreal because we didn't know when and where our coverage was going to end. We didn't know when the election was going to end because it didn't end on May 9th. It didn't end on May 10th. It just sort of went on to this purgatory state in which we all felt, apart from being sleep deprived, we were just really unsure in terms of our roles as citizens, as journalists, as presenters and producers. You were trying to make sense of it as you went along. And it's not just us, the folks at Astro Awani, the folks at Malaysia Kini. We were all sort of trying to make sense of it, yet also do our jobs.
Yeah. Sharat, you were on air during election night for what seems like an eternity. For you personally, when did you feel like something was about to happen or something different this time might happen?
I just have a question for you, Sharat. I mean, we had conversations before GE14 and for me, it had reduced to a sense of hopelessness. And for me, the only way there was going to be a change was if there was divine intervention. And I remember speaking to you and you said, you know, the redelineation really did it for the ruling coalition at that time. Yeah. You know, there's no way, you know, there was going to be a change in government because of that exercise as well. But, you know, as you were going along, Sharat, I mean, how did that make you feel?
Well, we had several conversations with experts because, you know, by that time we weren't allowed to actually have politicians on air. And I was very disappointed with that because we had had two debates by younger politicians who willing from both sides of the coalition and both sides of the divide, willing to enter into a kind of debate with each other. I thought we'd prove that we could have intelligent debate on the station. So we were left to experts, and the experts were telling us a variety of things, including that, yes, the redelineation exercise was designed to aid Barisan Nasional, but it was based on a certain premise, right? And that premise didn't hold, and this is what we couldn't tell until the last minute. So despite all the predictions, right, so even Merdeka Center was telling us, yes, there's a swing, but it's going to be sufficient. What we didn't count on were things like UMNO voters or UMNO members not voting.
Yeah, their version of protesting by staying at home. I mean, that's a real tangible thing that we completely sort of missed out on in the lead up to it.
Yeah, and so because of that, because we weren't on the ground feeling this, and some you know journalists that we spoke to during that period were telling us something of that set, giving us some sense of that. The redelineation exercise worked in against the Barisan Nasional, as did their decision to have a midweek poll. So when we spoke to Ben Sufian in the run up to the polling day, we said, "What is this midweek poll going to do?" And he says, "Actually, what it's done is it's fired people up. People are angry about it, and so people who might not have come out to vote actually decided to come out and vote against the Barisan Nasional because they had, you know, very foolishly decided to put impediments in front of, you know, genuine voters." So it was a lot of confusion as to what the polls were saying, and that was what we were relying on because we were not on the ground. So until the very last, when, you know, and because we held to this, let's not talk to politicians idea. It was a policy, internal policy, you know, of course imposed on us in some ways by the regulators. We couldn't get their sense of it because they clearly were also on the ground and they were already saying, oh, something is happening, you know. So I think from the perspective of somebody working in a studio, you take what you can and then... I didn't expect the results, and I dare say very few people did.
Even at 3 a.m. you did not?
Well, no, by 3 a.m. I mean, Ezra is completely right. I mean, the results don't... If they start, you know, going through results from, you know, far-flung places and they keep repeating it, you know something's up. And, you know, this is what was happening on Astro Awani. So you had that very famous moment on Astro Awani when Karim Razlan starts saying, you know, get rid of the Elections Commission chief because he's completely incompetent. We will have none of this. You know, that exasperation that he expressed was what the rest of us felt. But clearly something was up. And more importantly was if, as Dr. Mahathir had already announced, that they had taken government, whether this was going to happen. Were all our institutions going to play ball? Was Najib going to concede? And was, as we had to wait 24 hours for, the AGOM going to play his role?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say that May 9th and I guess that following weekend, I don't know if Netflix is going to produce anything more drama worthy for 2018, for me at least. Yeah. But they can try.
Yeah. You know, what we're doing now, I guess, to a large extent, could not have been done had results gone the other way on May 9th.
Yeah.
Perhaps I can get all of you to summarize your fondest memory from either G13 or G14. I'll start with you, perhaps, Mira.
Fondest memory.
Memorable. Doesn't have to be fond.
I don't have fond memories, leading regulatory for the station. No fond memories at all, except for, creating better bonds among some of my fellow colleagues. I'm just relieved. That job now is going to be very different. I almost feel useless on the regulatory front at the moment. But you never know. 10 years of being scarred, I'm just thinking, oh, when's the next clampdown? Is it going to come? I have no idea. But we'll make the best of what we have at the moment.
Sharat.
Well, despite the limitations we placed on ourselves, the fact is that the owners of the station agreed to push the envelope in significant ways. 2013, we were told we couldn't do this and the other. We went ahead and did it pretty much. In 2014, we were told no uncertain terms, no politics, nada, not even balance until after the elections. You can do anything you want after the elections. Nothing after that. We still went ahead and we did election programming. We still continue to talk about the politics of the country. For me, that courage to push the envelope, for me, that remains the high point. The limitations notwithstanding.
Ezra.
I think in the early hours of May 10th, I think I might have left the office about 6 a.m. And it was really a really tiring night. It was, I think, a quick trip to McDonald's and just having some sort of sustenance. And I remember feeling a little bit overwhelmed at that point simply because, I've only been part of this radio station for about 7-odd years or so. And I think it just drew back every memory of every song that we pick, every topic that a producer produces, every talkback or every caller calling in to air their grievances, every annoying regulatory meeting, every frustrating discussion that producers would have because they could or could not discuss it on air. It felt like, at least for those couple of days, that, oh, that's what you did it for. So that was really nice. And so whether we can replicate or do something moving forward, I think that will be the challenge for us, because the kind of change that I was speaking of, it's something that's always going to be changing and adapting to its new environment. And I think certainly we are in one.
Yeah.
It's surreal.
Surreal. Ezra, Sharat, Mira, thank you very much for doing this.
Always a pleasure.
You're most welcome.
To the next 10 years
yes.
and beyond. Thank you for listening. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.